Du hörst den Potenzialforscher-Podcast, Episode Nummer 51. In dieser Folge spreche ich mit dem Kranio- und CRE-Ausbildner Steve Haynes darüber, warum es so wichtig ist, in unserem Körper zu sein und warum uns das oft schwerfällt. Als Spezialist für Schmerz, Trauma und Angst gibt er wertvolle Tipps, wie wir mit der aktuellen schwierigen Situation umgehen können. Willkommen beim Potenzialforscher-Podcast für mehr Freude, Erfüllung und Sinn im Leben. Ich bin dein Potenzialforscher-Coach Christina Schacka. Hallo liebe Potenzialforscherin, hallo lieber Potenzialforscher. Steve Haynes, mein heutiger Gast im Potenzialforscher-Podcast, ist einer meiner ehemaligen Kraniosakrallehrer. Ich schätze seine einzigartige Fähigkeit, komplizierte Zusammenhänge einfach und klar darzustellen. Er unterrichtet Kraniosakraltherapie und CRE rund um den Globus. Steve nennt sich selbst einen Bodyworker. Er beschäftigt sich tiefgreifend mit Schmerz, Trauma und Angst. Er ist Co-Autor von Cranial Intelligence und Autor der Grafikbücher Pain is really strange, Trauma is really strange sowie Anxiety is really strange, die auch übrigens auf Deutsch erhältlich sind. Steve lebt und arbeitet in Genf und London. Das Interview führen wir auf Englisch, deshalb auch ein kurzes Intro auf Englisch. Steve Haynes, my guest in the Potenzialforscher podcast today, is one of my former teachers for craniosacral therapy. I really like his capacity to explain very complicated things in a very clear and simple way. Besides craniosacral therapy, he teaches also TRE, what means trauma-releasing exercising around the world. Steve calls himself a bodyworker. He is specialized in pain, trauma and anxiety and also wrote several books about it. He lives and works in Geneva and in London. Hello, Steve. I really appreciate that you are on this podcast show and thanks for being here.
Yeah, no, great to touch base again. It's been a while since we've talked and I remember working with you.
So great. Steve, let's start with a personal question. Usually you travel around the world teaching craniosacral therapy and TRE and now you are stranded in Geneva because of the coronavirus. How do you handle the situation? What helps you?
Yeah, running has been the saving grace at the moment. But it's been hard to structure my time. You know, I've had a very busy calendar set up, 3 months of traveling and teaching, mostly Europe and Ireland, and that's all gone. So yeah, I'm still learning, if I'm entirely honest. I've been cooking more, having more elaborate coffee rituals, a bit of meditation, but the running has been a big focus, being able to get out for an hour or so every day. We can still do that round here, and that's kept me going. Yeah, learning, trying to do catch up and make some new plans, but it's a strange time for sure.
So you're deeply into the topics pain, trauma, and also anxiety in your work. What would you recommend people right now who struggle with the current situation or who are very scared?
Well, I think the cool thing for me is always connecting to our body and listening to our body. So for me, the body is a story of who we are. Many people get very hooked into mental concepts and beliefs, and we need to engage with those, but our body will be holding fear responses. And by acknowledging the feeling states inside of us, we can transcend our feeling states or generate choices. So we may be feeling angry or stuck or fearful, and that's going to change how our physiology works. Our heart will be beating a little quicker. Our muscles will be a bit tighter. Our belly will be cramping and switched off. We don't need a belly when we're running away from a tiger. So we tend to switch off long-term projects like digestion. So really the primary thing is just the first step is to acknowledge your body's needs and to be skillful at learning to pay attention to that. And then out of that comes choices. So I think the first big step is really pay attention to your body and value that you are struggling. It is very different. Everybody's having to adapt and everybody's got friends or family or work that has changed quite radically. And even if you are feeling resourced, your body's going to creep up on you and you can avoid that by paying more attention to it.
Thank you. You are teaching TRE, what means trauma-releasing exercises. Can you tell us about that more?
Yeah, it's a very novel paradigm developed by David Boselli. There's two nice metaphors around TRE. First is, well, the essential thing around TRE is shaking. So we set up an involuntary tremor in the body. And we found that the tremor helps people release tension, so trauma releasing exercises. The model, core model might be that we're braced against life. We go through an overwhelming experience. We have a lot of stress in our lives. And we tighten up or we speed up to try and cope. And we can get stuck in that fight or flight response, that speedy, go quick model of being in the world. And the initial very clear idea was that we shake to release tension. So all those muscles, your diaphragm, your psoas, your back muscles, your chest muscles that are sort of switched on, your jaw muscles that are switched on to try and help you cope or run or fight or kind of move away or deal with danger by speeding up. We can kind of switch those off and help you come out of that protective reflex. That's one core idea. However, as the work's deepened and matured over the last 5 to 10 years, we've really understood that shaking is also about a kind of gentle waking up and feeling of connection to the body. So you might say that shaking generates new feelings of connection and ease and joy, and that helps us come out of freeze state. So another response to being overwhelmed is collapsing, freezing, disappearing from our body. We might see shaking as a gentle stimulus to wake up, feel more joy, more connection, and to learn how to feel what's actually happening in our body. So the novelty around TRE is a simple set of 7 exercises that tire the body out, a little bit of stretching, a little bit of ritual and routine. Just very clever, just 15 minutes of the preparatory exercises. Then we invite people to lie down. We call it a butterfly position. The knees are kind of on the back, knees, soles of the feet together, knees apart, gently bring the knees together. And that sets up a gentle shaking mechanism. And then that can move throughout the body in interesting and creative ways. And that's the paradigm, really. Get people shaking, get people more connected, help them release tension. And it's a self-regulating tool, a tool that people can do for themselves.
Oh, that's what I wanted to ask. Can people do it on their own, or do they need, like a coach or a counselor for that? Or how does that work?
Yeah, 3 main ways of learning TRE. You can do it as a sort of normal one-to-one therapeutic process. So have an individual session and someone guides you through. We might recommend that initially for people with very complex needs. Some people learn in groups, so maybe a bit like a yoga class, you know, one teacher, 15, 20, 20 people, and you can, the teacher will talk you through the 7 exercises and how to go into the shakes, how to stop the shakes, how to pay attention to them. But also, quite amazingly, the really democratic, incredible thing about TRE is people can learn it for themselves. So there's a phone app. The sequence is available online now for the last few months. You can read a book, various ways, get a leaflet about how to do the exercises. And we found that's been incredibly safe for people. We would frame it as TRE is a tool to help you feel more connected to your body. And a little bit like meditation, you learn to meditate, and it's a tool of you healing you. You might need guidance or support to learn some of the basics, but also it's your body. Bodies are sort of, it's a very primitive natural reflex. So we're letting something that's deeply natural kind of work through your system. And on that level, we really trust it as a very safe paradigm. So yes, people can learn on their own. And our experience, David Boselli, I think that's quite an amazing moment for him to make that choice, to make the exercise sequence available and teach people about shaking and how it's a joyful process of connecting to the body. And our experience has been that's been overwhelmingly safe. With, you know, trauma is complex and meeting your body is complex, and we're there to guide you. So groups and one-to-one sessions are available for people who initially that process a little bit more fearful or difficult. Does that make sense?
Yes, and I read a quote on your website that I would like to read. It says, once you have learned the exercises and can feel and allow the tremors, you just let the body do its own healing. So that sounds quite easy. Is it that easy?
Yeah, well, I've been teaching for a long time, you know, as you, craniosacral therapy and our treatments of chiropractic and shiatsu and massage, all those things are in my history. I get more good feedback from teaching TRE classes than I have done from all those other therapies, and I think I'm pretty good at some of those. And so you can meet a lot of people by teaching groups and safely introducing a really interesting, clever way of meeting the body. And our experience is a worldwide community. We believe over 2 million people have gone through the shaking process now and have learned how to shake. Is one of overwhelming a movement towards health. So yes, bodies are amazing. One of the things that hooked me into TRE was David Baselli said that we wouldn't be here as a human species unless we'd learn to survive and thrive actually after traumatic events. So yes, we do get activated. We do go into going quick fight or flight, or we do go into freeze mode. And when the definition of trauma was first came through, there became a little bit of a victim culture, the idea that this has happened to you and you were fixed and your brain was changed, your body was changed. It was very hard to come out of. And I want to honor, yes, sometimes people do get stuck. But the literature is very clear. Depending on what you read, 30 to 70% of people, after an overwhelming experience, within 6 months define themselves as being happier, life has more meaning, and that they've learned and grown from that experience. And this is the really difficult stuff, the death of a loved one, horrible car accidents, traumatic, overwhelming events. So human beings, actually, we've evolved to grow from stressful appearances. That which doesn't kill, no. What's the Nietzsche quote? That which doesn't kill me
makes me stronger.
I can't actually remember the quote, but that's the paradigm we actually learn, and that's fundamental to humans. So we have these mechanisms that switch on very quickly to help us respond to danger. However, if we get it right, we can switch off quite quickly, and that frees up human beings to do much more interesting and joyful things. So yeah, I'd say within our genetics, there is this gift of our ability to transcend our suffering and actually to become stronger and learn from it. And that adaptability is a fundamental feature of being human.
It's a lot about being safe in our bodies. Why is that so important? Because in normal daily life, we live more in our minds than in our body. Why is it so important to come back to the body?
Yeah, that's a big question. The best theorist around this, I think, is Stephen Porges. So he has a model called the polyvagal theory. And he has really demonstrated, I believe, that one of the most essential questions a human being is answering is, am I safe or not? If there is the perception of danger or the habitual response to stimuli as if they're dangerous, then our physiology goes down pathways of fight or flight or freeze. So it turns out basically all emotions, all thought are founded on this underlying framework of, am I safe? So we might say human beings contract and move away from things. That tends to limit our choices, quite fixed thinking, quite difficult emotions of stuck or anger or I can't do things. Or we have this sense of safety and novelty, and we can move towards things, explore and be creative. And human beings function better when we have this open, flexible, spacious way of exploring the world. And I think that's necessarily an embodied process. It's these, if our brain decides something is unsafe, it changes how our body works. It makes us go tight. If we're in fight or flight, it speeds us up or it switches us off. And if you understand that, that changes everything for me. I would see most human behavior, most difficult emotions, most attempts to control things are founded in the need for safety. And if we can really recognize these feelings and physiological states and learn to interact with them, and I'm offering shaking as a tool to do that, there are many other ways, meditation, good body work, movement, all sorts of things can help switch off our physiology when we're stuck, then human beings tend to function much better. So not being connected to your body or being stuck in a body that is tight and fixed on surviving, we tend not to function very well. Is that useful to start with?
Absolutely. Why do you think it's so difficult for us to be grounded in our bodies?
There's many strands here, actually. One of them might be religion and the idea that we have an eternal soul, and health is about nourishing our eternal soul, and bodies aren't really to be trusted. They're a bit messy, they're full of desire. And we do have quite dramatic images in Christian culture of bodies that are whipped or punished or spread out on crosses. You know, there's a lot of suffering associated with the body. So I think there's an inherent separation in our culture to start with. I also think that we're very negatively biased as human beings. So I want you to think about the time you've worn a favorite dress and 100 people tell you that dress looks amazing on you, but one person says your bum looks big in it. And that's the quote that you remember, because our brains are really negatively biased. So if we have one dangerous experience, then, and we survived it by going quick or by disappearing, our brain tends to default to that. It remembers the dangerous, difficult things, and they tend to be govern behavior more quickly. And that's just really unfortunate, but it's really the problem of persistent pain, persistent anxiety, and being stuck, is that our brain had a habitual response to something that was dangerous, and it's very hard for it to let go. There's a very graphic, another way of demonstrating that. And this is from Daniel Kahneman, who was a Nobel Prize-winning economist. And I saw it in his book. I actually think he quotes another theorist, but anyway. So if you have a bowl of cherries and you put a cockroach in the bowl of cherries, all the cherries are disgusting. Yeah? And that's how the brain works. One negative experience really changes everything and is very hard to recover from. Not many people are going to eat those cherries if there's been one cockroach in the bowl. In reality, they're probably all fine. If we do the reverse, if we have a bowl of cockroaches and we put one cherry in, it's all still disgusting. So the one positive thing doesn't really outweigh hundreds of negative things, but the other reverse, one negative thing outweighs loads of positive things. And that has an evolutionary advantage. If we notice the single dangerous thing in a field of information and it helped to survive, maybe the eyes of a tiger in a forest of leaves, the people who did that were able to escape more quickly. So there's an evolutionary argument about why we are negatively biased. But what happens is we get stuck and all sorts of innocuous stimuli begin to be, we overreact to them. So we might say, you know, my partner leaves the top of the toothpaste off. So I've told them not to do that. They don't respect me. They don't love me. I'm going to die. This might be the sequence. And we get very reactive, very angry. And it's a very small symbol. And you see it every day. And every day you're going through this sequence if your body's stuck in this danger mode. And that's just very, very hard for human beings.
You teach also craniosacral therapy as well for many years now. Where is for you the connection between craniosacral and TRE? If there is any.
Yeah, I like saying, well, TRE is quite a quick rhythm. So we can see the shaking and it's, legs moving quickly, sometimes long, slow stretches. But really, it's a relatively quick vibration and shaking tremor that moves through the body. I would offer that all life is rhythmical. Rhythms are a fundamental feature of nature and of living. We have circadian rhythms. We have heartbeats, we have flow of CSF up and down around our cerebral spinal fluid, around our nervous system. We have muscles that fasciculate that are always slightly tremoring in the background. We have waves going through our gut. So rhythm is a defining feature of life. And there are lots of rhythms inside a human body. And the paradigm of cranial work is that all those rhythms come together to give a kind of a what we call tide, but a sense of a pulsing body. And this pulse is really, really slow. So I might say that in cranial work, we pay attention to slow rhythms of which come together, or like the overall music that's played by all those other rhythms that I've described, your heartbeat, your pulse, your lung breathing, your muscles twitching, all those rhythms come together to give this slow pulse of life. So the link for me is a rhythmic, slow quality in cranial work, and we pay attention to that. We learn how to help the pulse or the music being played by those rhythms be more coherent, more joyful. And the same in TRE, but we're just doing it on a quicker rhythm, but we're helping it be more coherent, to move freely through the body, and to allow that sense of connection to be expressed as a sense of rhythmic tremoring that can move throughout the whole body. So TRE, quick rhythms, cranial, really slow rhythms.
That's beautiful. Wow. What I think is very interesting, that you name yourself as a body worker. That's something we don't know as a word in German, or we know it, but we wouldn't use it probably. Where does that come from? Why a body worker?
Yes, it does have a history in the UK, and it's kind of a general term. And yeah, I've struggled with finding an identity. You know, I spent 5 years training to be a chiropractor, and I learned a lot there, but it's not really something. I don't like manipulation as a paradigm these days. Cranial sacral therapy, shiatsu, TRE, the focus is I work with bodies. So that's where that term came from. It's a confusing term for some people. I really acknowledge that.
It's a great one.
But I like, you know, terms I've played with. There was a film around called The Horse Whisperer, and I love the idea of being a body whisperer, this idea that you're paying attention to bodies and somehow supporting them. And I did play at one stage of calling myself a body whisperer, but it felt a bit pretentious and quite thick.
I like that one too.
I stayed with body worker, and you know, it's reasonably enough well known in English language that it kind of people don't get too surprised by.
When you look back now, you have more than 25 years of experience as a body worker. What was one of your very important learnings?
I used to work with people with mental health problems, so people with diagnosis of schizophrenia or manic depression. And that working in mental health was really fascinating for me. And I got very interested in the notion of madness and what is sanity and all sorts of power dynamics. And I had very clear career choices then to become a psychotherapist. A lot of my core friends are from that period. And it's like, you know, one's a psychiatrist, two a psychologist, one's a psychotherapist. But for me, at that time, I got into yoga. And I remember very clearly one of the yoga teachers saying, if you have a space under your armpits, you won't be depressed. And I really didn't understand how that could work. And I think the explanation is that if you've got a space under your armpits, your chest is lifted. If your chest is lifted, you're breathing well. If you're breathing well, that's going to change how you think and feel. You'll be less depressed.
Well, that makes sense.
Yeah, puzzling over that. And then the experience of doing yoga and realizing that actually I felt much healthier when I paid attention to my body. I really got into yoga for 13, 14 years. I'm an ex-yogi now, but it was very, very important to me. So that was a really landmark moment, the idea that I could improve my mental health by working through my body. And there's a 5,000 years of history of doing that in the yogi tradition. That really set me on a path of working with the body. So most of my friends at that time stayed and became amazing psychiatrists, psychotherapists. But for me, I specialized in working with bodies. So yeah, yoga and the gift of realizing that by breathing better, moving better, feeling more connected, we can change our mental health. That was a very early learning from the yoga experience.
You also wrote two books. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, it's actually four books.
Four already? I'm not up to date. Or you're too fast.
So Cranial Intelligence, we wrote a book about cranial sacral therapy, myself and Jed Sumner. But I've done, recently though, it's been three comic books. Pain is Really Strange, Trauma is Really Strange, and Anxiety is Really Strange. The pain one was the first one. So the idea was a short and sweet comic book. Very graphic, very simple ideas, but complex ideas simply explained with a kind of little bit of science underneath to help people ground these simple paradigms. So because I've been a teacher for a long time, learning to try and explain things simply to people and needing simple explanations for myself, and I put a lot of effort into my presentations, and I really like good visuals. I think, you know, a picture is better than 1,000 words. So that was the impetus, and I was incredibly lucky finding a young artist who just graduated from college. And the first book went really, really well. Very lucky with the publisher as well. They had a person who'd written a comic book before on their staff. So that team worked really well to create a 32-page comic book. And I've been amazed just how well it's done, explaining fairly complex ideas around pain, but using really amazing graphics with a little narrator working through. And the comic books have been great. The first one was pain and just exploring some of the counterintuitive ideas around pain. And then the trauma book did really well. The trauma one is the best-selling one. And then the anxiety one we did 2 years ago. That actually won an award, which made me very happy. They're now translated into French, German, Chinese, and one of them's in Korean as well. So it's been really lovely 5 years, and they've really grown in a way that's quite surprised me.
Congratulations.
Thank you very much. Last year, yes, they were translated into German. Yeah, fantastic. But they're freely available.
Do you plan another one?
Yeah, well, at the moment, I'm waiting to hear from the publisher. So in this lockdown and my enforced being at home for a few months, I was lucky enough, the publisher had asked me about it and we've made a proposal. Hopefully Touch Is Really Strange will be the next one. Just exploring how touch works for masseurs and human beings in general, really.
So you can use this time of the coronavirus for another book, for a good thing.
That's the goal. Yep. The artist, unfortunately, the artist has had some work cancelled. Well, has had some work cancelled because of coronavirus. So she's got a bit of space. I've got a ton of space. The publishers are hopefully interested. We'll hear in a week or a few days. And if that goes ahead, then Touch Is Really Strange will be the next.
Hey, great. Sounds great. What drives you? What is your passion in your life?
Most people don't know how powerful feeling is. So I might say, keep feeling, keep feeling, keep feeling. It's so important to be skillful at this process, and it changes so many things. So from people being stuck in what might be classically seen as mental health problems, depression or anger or anxiety, if you learn to feel and get connected to your body, then you can change emotional stories and belief systems and, you know, complex constructs we have about not being good enough, or I'm an angry person, or I'm someone who's a failure, or I don't things well enough. Again, if we root ourselves in safety in our body, we realize that a lot of those very powerful defining life statements are rooted in early experiences. And if we feel that emerging I'm not good enough or I can't do this quality deep inside of us, and we realize that my physiology is completely geared to this collapsing state, then again, very big life statements that people think are fixed around who they are can change by getting better at the business of feeling. So that's really powerful for me. And then finally, just understanding how pain is also about feeling states. And by learning to interact with and choose a different narrative or appreciate the complexity of pain, that we can turn off pain. So something, pain is often seen classically as a structural physical problem. Anxiety is seen as an emotional problem, and trauma is seen as a mental problem or psychological problems. And the link for all of them, I think, is rooted in the ability to feel. So my passion is trying to communicate that by connecting to our body, we can change all these things. And we have a huge amount of adaptability and creativity within inside of us. And trying to find ways of communicating that to people, trying to help my clients find the sense of joy and agency in them is really exciting work and never dull, actually.
Is there a tip you can give to the audience for how to be able to feel better or feel at all?
Yeah, I'd say give feelings a location and a geography in your body. So there's, I know, I think in German you have a metaphor, my heart's in my trousers. So this idea that your heart sinks when you're fearful, these metaphors are really have a lot of wisdom in them. So we might have, in English, we say we have a gut-wrenching decision, or my heart is broken. And I want, just by paying attention to where you feel something. So if I'm angry, don't just go to the concept and the why you're angry. Where do I feel angry? How do I feel angry? Is there a place? And we might find you've got a tightness around your heart, or a fist in your solar plexus, or your big muscles in your back are really, really tightened. And if you learn to make that link between a place in your body that gets activated, that's a huge step, because then once it's moved into the theater of the body, you can play with it in different ways. You can breathe differently. You can move differently. You can relax into it. You can explore the feeling state without having to do mental tricks. You can really change the tone and sort of ease things out by helping that place in your body change through skillful awareness and movement.
Oh, that's very helpful. Thank you. If people are interested in your work, Steve, where can they find you?
Yeah, bodycollege.net. So everything I do sort of gets funneled through that site now. So there's a whole bunch of blogs and resources. You can access all the books through that, and online trainings and courses that I run. So yeah, bodycollege.net. Also Facebook, I post fairly regularly there, ideas around pain, trauma and anxiety. So at Body College, you can find on Facebook, or it's pain, anxiety and trauma are really strange.
Do you do a seminar or a workshop about TRE in Switzerland or in Germany this year?
There is a newly emerging TRE Schweiz, and they've been amazing to get stuff going there. So I ran some trainings 3-4 years ago in Switzerland, and there's been some other trainers go through Switzerland. But now there is a cohort of people who are really passionate and trying to get TRE working in Switzerland. So a good place to start is TRE Schweiz. And we did have some plans for some courses pre-coronavirus. They will still happen, but the dates are changing right now. But TRE Schweiz is a really great website. There are some already established professionals there who you can learn TRE from, particularly in the Zurich area. And there are some in the French-speaking part as well. So that would be a good resource. And there will be some trainings announced towards the end of this year and next year in Switzerland.
Steve, thank you very much for being on the show and for this inspiring conversation. Thank you very much.
Great to talk to you, Christina. Really lovely to... congratulations on your book, by the way.
And thanks.
Sounds like the podcast has been going great.
Ich mag den Ansatz von Steve sehr, dass der Körper der Schlüssel zu unserer Gesundheit ist, auch in seelischer oder psychologischer Hinsicht. Wenn du mehr über Steve Haynes' Arbeit erfahren möchtest, findest du alle Links in den Shownotes. Falls du meinen neuen Ratgeber «Die Magie deines Potenzials» noch nicht gelesen hast, dann freue ich mich, wenn du mich mit einer Bestellung für dich oder deine Lieben unterstützt. Du bekommst es überall im Buchhandel als gebundene Ausgabe oder als E-Book. Einen möglichen Bestelllink findest du auf meiner Webseite. Natürlich würde ich mich unglaublich über dein Feedback und deine Rezension freuen. Danke für dein Potenzialleuchten in der Welt. Deine Christina. Und denk daran, wenn wir unser Potenzial in die Welt tragen, dann ist es Magie. Etwas in uns leuchtet besonders hell.